Welcome, everyone. I'm so grateful to all of you joining me live for this session on why it's so important to have an honest emotional conversation without your stomach cramping. My name is Uma Girish, and many of you who are here know me and you're familiar with my work. But for those of you who are not, I just want to give you a brief introduction. I'm a grief guide and an award-winning author. I guide spiritually oriented women who are grieving a loss, whether you're grieving the death of a loved one, the end of a relationship, the loss of a dream, or watching a parent die. You just want to stop hurting and find peace. I help you make peace with your pain so you can finally feel a sense of control over your life. I'm the author of two books, Understanding Death, 10 Ways to Inner Peace for the Grieving, which is an e-book, and a transformational memoir called Losing Amma, Finding Home, a memoir about love, loss, and life's detours. This was published by Hay House in 2014, and both these books are available on Amazon if you want to check them out. So those of you who know my story and who are familiar with my work know this, but if you don't, it was the death of my 68-year-old mother in January 2009 that brought me to the work I do today. I was born and raised in India, but my husband, daughter, who was 15 at the time, and I moved to the States. We live in Chicago. We moved in the spring of 2008. My mother was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer just weeks after we moved, and she died 8 months after her diagnosis. Now, this death was the hardest thing I have ever been through. I really didn't think I could recover from this because I was just so broken. It brought me to my knees. And as I was going through this darkness, wondering what was next, wondering what would help me heal myself and move forward, that's when doors started to open and my purpose became clear to me. And I tell this whole story of transformation in my book, Losing Amma, Finding Home, and that's available on Amazon if you haven't read it. So I just want to let you know that we will have a Q&A segment at the end of the teaching segment. So as you're listening, I invite you to grab pen and paper and make some notes, whatever you feel guided to write down, whatever you feel called to capture. It's best to write it down. Also write down any questions you have as you're listening, and I'll answer all your questions after the presentation and stay as long as you need me to. So before we begin, I always like to take a moment and invite all of you to close your eyes just as a way to create sacred space. All my teaching sessions, all my client sessions, everything begins with this moment of silence and sacred space. Take a deep breath, and as you breathe in, feel your lungs fill up with oxygen and energize you. And as you breathe out, let go of all the tensions and worries and anxieties you've been carrying through your day. Take a couple more deep breaths. And exhale slowly. As you breathe in, now bring your attention to the center of your chest, your heart chakra. Really begin to pay attention to your heart chakra because that is the home of your wisdom. Whatever you hear me say today, whatever resonates with you, resonates because of the wisdom of your heart chakra. This is something you know already but have just forgotten. And when I say something and you feel that moment of insight, that moment of recognition, that is your heart speaking to you and awakening you to the truth that already lies within you. So just really bring your focus to your heart chakra You can see it as a ball of golden light. And make an intention for yourself. Think about why you're here receiving this information. Think about a situation that's causing you some frustration or grief, which is what brings you to this information, which you're hoping will heal something in your life. So really get clear about your intention. And one last deep breath. Breathing in and exhaling. Feel your shoulders drop. Bring all of your attention to this moment and this time that we have together. So we have a lot to cover, so let's dive right in. There are three pieces to this presentation, and the very first piece I'm going to talk about is 9 reasons why we hate and avoid hard conversations. So just as a context as to why I'm doing this, what led me to teach this? First of all, as I was saying to some of you who came on early, I usually ask the universe, what do you want me to teach next? And the universe will answer by sending me people who have problems that follow a particular pattern. In this case, many of my clients were coming to me and saying that they were having people-pleasing problems. They wanted to speak their truth but just didn't know how to do it. They were being challenged by difficult relationships, people who were pushing their buttons, aggressive, and they were looking for some answers. So that's a clear sign to me that that's what the universe wants me to be teaching. When I look back at my own life, my mother was a big-time people-pleaser. And I watched how she got stomped on because she was so invested in everyone else's opinions but her own. So she went what I call opinion shopping. She would ask everyone what she needed to do about a particular person or a situation that she had to tackle. And people would give her all these different opinions, conflicting opinions, and she would be completely confused and not know what to do. And watching this, I decided that I didn't want to be like that. I did not want to be a people pleaser. And what I did was I went all the way to the other extreme, where I became very self-identified with my own opinion. I became highly opinionated about everything, and it was my way or the highway. Neither extreme is good, right? We all need to be somewhere in the middle. We need a sense of balance. But an interesting thing happened when I got married. The family that I married into was very different emotionally. They didn't talk about emotions. They didn't feel negative emotions. They brushed things under the carpet. They were very uncomfortable and awkward around emotions like grief and sadness and anger. They were very invested in being nice to each other, and they never talked about anything unpleasant. This was really hard for me because I grew up in a family where we were allowed to let everything hang out, so to speak. My parents were okay with tears. They were okay with anger. We felt held and comforted and hugged. And so when I went into this family, my husband's family, all of a sudden the dynamic was so different. But for the first time in my life, I had an intense desire to be like them. I had an intense desire to fit in. And that's when I started becoming very conscious of people pleasing. So I tried to do everything I could to be like his sisters, to be like his mother, and it was just so uncomfortable. It was just so awkward. I didn't know how to do it, but I tried everything in my power. I failed. I didn't like who I was because I was trying to be someone else. At the same time, because the rules were so different, it didn't come to me naturally, and I ended up not pleasing myself and not pleasing anybody else. Well, all of that changed when my mother died. When my mother died, I completely and totally awakened to the truth that I needed to be who I am. It just became very clear to me. It was one of the deepest changes that I found within myself at that time. I thought to myself, if I can't be who I am, what's the point of living this life? I came here to be Uma. I didn't come here to be anybody else. And I'm going to be Uma. And so I started living by my rules. I stopped people-pleasing. I stopped caring about whether people liked what I did, liked what I said. And believe you me, I have never felt freer. This is freedom. This is liberation. Living life on my terms, asking me what matters to me, living by my rules is really the best way to live. And I want that for you. I want that for everyone, especially all of you who signed up for this class. So let's dive into 9 reasons why we hate and avoid hard conversations. Because that's why we people please. We don't want to have conversations that are about, I am different, I think differently, I have a different opinion on this, and I'm going to voice it. We don't do that. And why is that? The very first reason why we hate these conversations is because we believe that keeping the relationship we have is more important than telling the truth, because it would just upset everyone if we told the truth, right? So we think, let's keep the relationship we have. I mean, it's working on some level. Let's just keep it going. If I spoke my truth, I would just upset the apple cart. People would be very mad at me, and I don't want to do that. Now, that's fine if you're happy with the current relationship dynamics. But if you were happy with the current relationship dynamics, you wouldn't have signed up for this class, right? You want to experience a different dynamic in the relationship. Maybe you want more openness, honesty, understanding, connection, transparency. And clearly, you're not finding that. Now, we mistakenly believe that it's more important to keep the relationship we have. But when we hold back our truth, we do so from a place of fear, not love. The lie we tell ourselves is, you know, I don't want to back chat. I don't want to talk over somebody. I don't want to disagree. Because you know what? We are a family. We should just love everybody and be okay with what they're saying and how they're feeling. But the truth is, we do that from a place of fear, not love. But if you want to change something, you have to find a new behavior, right? If you keep doing the same thing and they keep doing the same thing, nothing will change. You will keep getting the same outcome. You remember that famous Albert Einstein quote where he says, we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. And that's what happens. We can't solve our problems by doing the same thing over and over again if we want a different outcome. And if you're listening to me and you signed up for this class, clearly something isn't working and you want a different outcome. So that's the very first reason. The fact that we believe that keeping the relationship we have is more important than anything. The second reason is we are afraid of being triggered by the other person. We are afraid that our hurt, our guilt, our sadness is going to be triggered by the other person. And no one enjoys being provoked or triggered, right? But the thing to realize is that all these emotional hot buttons live inside us. No one can trigger something that doesn't exist within you. So imagine a hot button that lives inside you. If it is red hot and glowing, there is charge around it. And someone pushes that button and the button just flares up. It lights up even brighter. Imagine if there were no light, there were no heat, that button was off. People could push it all they wanted and nothing would trigger you. So these hot buttons live inside us. It's like if you try to draw money from an empty bank account, you get nothing. Something has to be there in that account for you to withdraw it, and it's the same with our feelings. So you have to understand that these hot buttons live inside you. So the end result is that we fear our own triggers. And this is not a bad thing, because when you know these triggers live inside of you, you can work with these triggers and heal them. That's the good news. So that's the second reason. We fear that our fears will be triggered by the people we have these conversations with. Reason number three, having a hard conversation feels like opening ourselves up to attack all over again. You know how you tell someone how you feel or how they made you feel and you get pushback? Let's say you're telling a friend over coffee, hey, you know, last week I called you and you just cut me off abruptly during our conversation. I felt a little hurt. And what do they turn around and say? Come on, this is me you're talking about. You think I would do something like that? You're just being super sensitive. Get over it. That's the response you get. You don't feel validated. We rarely receive validation and understanding when we tell people how we feel. How many of us hear the words, wow, I see how that must have been so hurtful for you? Does anyone ever say that? Maybe a few people do, but they have to be really, really few. Or does someone say, I really hear you. I understand how hard that must have been for you. I'm sorry. We don't get this kind of validation and feedback. And so we fear that if I just open up and tell this person how I'm feeling, I'm just going to be attacked. I'm going to end up feeling worse than I did before I opened my mouth. So we decide not to do it. The fourth reason is, just like other people attack us, we attack them. What others do to us, we do to them. Because all we know how to do is get defensive when someone says something about us. We feel attacked too. So what do we say? I'm not playing. I'm not going into that arena and opening myself up to being attacked. If they say something, I'm going to get really guarded and defensive. And so we do the same thing that others do to us. But being defensive is not an enjoyable experience. Having to justify and explain yourself on and on and on. We'd much rather people got us, people understood where we are coming from. So because it's too much of an effort, we say, you know what, I don't want to even go into that territory. I'm not having the conversation. The fifth reason is that we don't want to accept that we may have said or done something wrong. We don't want to own our personal stuff. Our agenda is to be right so we can feel good, we can be loved and validated. We are very invested in being right. But every situation has two sides. And we are unwilling to look at where we could have said or done something differently. It's just easier to avoid the whole conversation. Have you been there before? I know I have. Sometimes I don't want to hear what I messed up or how I said something that worsened the situation. So it's better not to go there, right? That's reason number five. Reason number six is we don't know how to listen. We are not very good listeners. Most of us are talkers. We can use up a zillion words to try and explain how badly we felt about something that happened, something that somebody said or did. But we really don't know how to listen. Listening is a skill. Do we know how to sit still and listen to someone who's telling us we were being irresponsible or uncaring or judgmental? We just get completely defensive. Instead of getting defensive, do we know how to say, wow, that's so interesting that you're telling me this. I didn't imagine that what I said came across as so judgmental. If we can get to that place, that is the space of openness and curiosity. That's where growth happens. That's where you begin to recognize that, oh my goodness, yeah, I mean, I could have said that in so many different ways, but I did say it in a way that came across as judgmental. But if you're not at peace with who you are, it's really hard to be that way. You have to have a lot of self-awareness to recognize that you could have said something without meaning to hurt somebody, but come across in a way that was hurtful. Reason number 7, we don't trust ourselves to stay calm in a conversation of this nature. You know, we don't always say something offensive or intentionally hurt somebody, but sometimes the other person hears something offensive in something we said without that intention. So what do? We become invested in proving that we didn't say that or we didn't mean that, and the conversation very quickly goes south. And that's not an interesting experience. Reason number 8, we are attached to the outcome of the conversation. This is a biggie. We are so invested in how the conversation will end. Now, in an ideal world, the other person would say, I'm so sorry I made you feel that way. I didn't mean to. What can I do to make you feel better? Unfortunately, 9 times out of 10, that's not the response we receive. Most people's experience points to the conversation getting more heated, arguments getting out of control, and probably even someone storming out in a huff. And that's not the best incentive to engage in a hard conversation. So because we are attached to the end goal of the conversation ending in a certain way, and 9 times out of 10 we haven't got that, we'd much rather not even have the conversation. And reason number 9, no one taught us how to have hard conversations using nonviolent words. I'll speak more about nonviolent words a little later, but the point I'm trying to make is that we associate telling the truth with getting self-righteous, being right, and sometimes even being aggressive because we don't know how to do it any other way. Well, there is a better way, and that is by using nonviolent words. And because we've had no training in doing this, we just freak out in a conversation that's not going right, where we're feeling attacked, where someone's misunderstanding our best intentions or questioning our integrity. We get completely out of control. So let's quickly recap the 9 reasons why we hate and avoid hard conversations. Number 1, we believe that keeping the relationship we have is more important than telling the truth. Number 2, we fear being triggered by the other person. Number 3, it feels like opening ourselves up to attack all over again. Number 4, what others do to us, we do to them. Number 5, we don't want to accept that we may have said or done something wrong. Number 6, we don't know how to listen. Number 7, we don't trust ourselves to stay calm in a conversation of this kind. Number 8, we are attached to the outcome of the conversation. Number 9, no one taught us how to have hard conversations using nonviolent words. So, when we live in fear of losing our current level of relationship with someone, we have a really hard time being emotionally honest with them. But what happens is that we gain in the short term by not bringing the difficult topic up, but we are really robbing ourselves of a deeper connection we could possibly experience. And this is not true in every case. You could have an emotionally honest conversation and say everything in the most caring and empathic manner, and the other person could still misunderstand your intention. So that's one point that I want you to be really clear on. This is not about, I will learn how to do this conversation really well, say everything perfectly, down to a script, and I will, because I have learned it this way, the other person will accept my point of view, or we can go back to having the perfect relationship I want for us. That doesn't always happen. So we must be aware that the other person's choice to accept or reject is theirs. We have no control over that. But the reason why we choose to be emotionally honest is because emotional honesty is a life skill. If you want to be in integrity with your highest self, this is a skill you must master because you need it in every area of your life. Work, relationships, how you manage your money, your health, and wellness. It will serve you really well if you learn the tricks to having an emotionally honest conversation. So, the second piece of the presentation is how to have an emotionally honest conversation. We don't know. That's what we need to learn, right? Now that we know why we avoid it, let's look at how do we have these honest conversations so we can enjoy a more enriching and fulfilling relationship with the people we love. Neil Donald Walsh, the author of Conversations with God, said something that has landed in my heart, and I use it so often in my presentations and my coaching sessions. He said, "Speak your truth, but soothe your words with peace." Speak your truth, but soothe your words with peace. Being untruthful and hiding who you really are in a relationship creates more harm than harmony in the long run. But speaking the truth also comes with a sense of responsibility. You must embrace peace in the way you deliver what you want to say. It's not about putting the truth out there any which way you want to, because that happens to be your truth. Because remember, in a situation that involves two people, there is your truth and there is their truth. And the real truth is somewhere in the middle of the two. Everybody sees a situation, an incident, through their own personal filters. So telling the truth isn't about convincing the other person to accept your point of view or bringing them over to your side. It is about stating what you see the way you see it with peace and kindness. And many of us have trouble doing this because we are so invested in being nice. So let's for a moment talk about the fact that being nice is all well and fine, but there is a price you pay for being nice. People who are invested in being nice all the time have trouble expressing negative emotions. Being nice all the time prevents you from being able to receive constructive feedback about where you need to grow. So let's say you go and talk to your friend, you share with her about something that your sister-in-law said about you, something that you felt was pretty unkind, even bordering on mean. Now, if you're one of those nice people who's always being nice, and you say this to your friend isn't really going to be able to give you constructive feedback because you are just so invested in being nice that she has to be nice to you all the time too. So what happens is that people who are always nice have trouble with constructive feedback. Others will block your emotional growth because there is this unspoken contract between you and them. I'm nice to you, so you'd better be nice to me too. So the truth never gets told because the contract between you and everybody else who's in your life is, I'm always nice to you, so you owe it to me to be nice. And where there is niceness, there can't be too much growth, there can't be constructive feedback, there can't be emotional development. The other thing is that you never really know where you stand with a nice person because they're nodding and smiling all the time, but you don't know what they're really thinking in their head, right? You don't know what they really want to say. So it's a bit tricky. With a nice person, you're skating on thin ice in the event of an argument or possible confrontation. If you really wanted to say something honestly to them, you have no idea how they will react or if the relationship will survive. Because a nice person is invested in being nice to you and they are invested in your being nice to them. For this reason, intimacy in these relationships is rarely possible, because nobody is telling the truth. Can you trust a nice person will back you up in a situation where they feel you're doing the right thing? Or will they simply continue to be nice and not take anyone's side? This is why authenticity becomes so important, because someone who's real, when you go up to them and say, hey, can you tell me, does this blouse look good on me? They might tell you, you know what, it's not really a flattering color on you. If you go to a nice person and ask them this, 10 times out of 10, they're going to say, yeah, that looks great on you. Great color. Good choice. You never know where you stand with someone who's nice. Nice people usually express anger until they find a safe, sorry, not express, they suppress anger until they find a safe place to dump it. And usually this happens by yelling at a child or a helpless partner. But what happens is because they suppress all their anger, this anger shows up as ulcers and backaches and chronic pain and inflammation and headaches, stomach cramps, all kinds of things. So this is why being nice all the time isn't really such a good idea. So now that we've talked about why it's necessary to tell the truth in relationships, I'm going to talk a little bit more about nonviolent communication. Nonviolent communication has four parts. So it's a four-part process. And the focus of the nonviolent communication process is to express how you are feeling without blaming or criticizing the other person. The focus is on expressing how you are feeling. So it's all about you and not so much about them. So the very first step in the nonviolent communication process is observation. What you observe, what you see, what you hear, what you remember, what you imagine. This is all part of observation. So let's take an example here. Let's say you are talking with your sister and your sister complains that you never call mom. You never call her enough. I'm the one who's always doing things for her. You know, I'm the one who's handling the lion's share of responsibilities with regard to her life. You never call her. You might say, when I hear you say that I never call mom. So your sentence will always begin with, when I hear, when I see, when I remember. So the I is really important. You are talking about your observation of the situation. When I hear you say that I never call mom, what happens? Fill in the blanks. Which brings us to step B. So the first step is observation. The second step is feelings. How you feel. This is not about thoughts. This is not about thinking or the mind. This is about emotions and body sensations. So you might say, when I hear you say that I never call mom, I feel angry, or I feel sad, or I feel cold and hard inside. You might describe a sensation, or I feel jittery all over. It makes me nervous. It's about feelings, how you feel. The third step is needs. It's about what you need. So the first step is observation, what I hear, when I hear, sorry. And the second step is feelings, how I feel. The third step is needs, which is what I need. So if we were to continue the same sentence, this is how it would flow. When I hear you say that I never call mom, I feel angry because I need you to understand, blah, blah, blah. And then you would fill in the blanks. I need you to understand that I had a really rough week. I need you to understand that my child was sick and needed all my time. I needed you to understand that work was really crazy. Or I needed you to understand that I need to some time and space to think about things. You are asking for a specific need to be met. And we are not very good about asking for a need to be met, especially with those we are in close relationship with. So Let's put this sentence together. When I hear you say that I never call mom, I feel angry because I don't feel understood. That could be a need. I don't feel understood. I need you to understand that I had a crazy week. I had a reason for not calling. The fourth part of the nonviolent communication process is request. This is where you request that a concrete action be taken. So that might look like this. Would you be willing to get coffee and talk about this? Would you be willing to listen to my side of the story? Would you be willing to just stay silent and let me speak? You are making a specific request of the other person. Do you see how in the nonviolent communication process, we are not making it about the other person, we are making it about ourselves? We are telling the truth, but we are telling it in such a way that it expresses our innate integrity. What we heard, what we saw, what we remembered, how we felt, what we need, and a specific request that we can make of the other person. All the while knowing that that request may not be met. But that's part of having an honest emotional conversation too. You can't back off because you're afraid they will say no, they will turn your request down. It's so important to be honest and let the outcome be what it is, because remember what I said, you only control your side of the conversation. You don't control the other person. Violent communication is demanding, blaming, criticizing, judging, labeling, accusing, ridiculing, pressuring. And we do this because we don't know how to ask for what we need without making unhealthy demands on other people, without threats, without coercion. This is what violent communication looks like. Nonviolent communication, on the other hand, is about speaking in a way that is generous and compassionate. At the end of a nonviolent communication session, people feel more connected and whole. The focus is on connecting, understanding, cooperating, and transforming the situation. Because isn't that what we want? We want the situation to be transformed to a better way of communicating, a better way of being with each other, a better way of relating. That's the goal of the nonviolent communication. All the while leaving margin for the fact that this person may still not be open to this way of being in the relationship. And you have to be willing to let that go. But it is your responsibility as an emotionally mature adult to learn how to have these conversations so you don't leave anything unfinished or unsaid or undone in the relationship. We all have our personal integrity in the relationship, and the reason why I'm doing this class is to help you understand that if you live from that place of integrity and you speak your truth and you deliver what you need to deliver, know that that's all you can do. That's all you have to do. So your side of the street is clean. And isn't that what we are all trying to do? So that is about how to have these honest conversations and hopefully enrich the connection. But it's not like flipping a switch. We can't flip a switch and go from being afraid to have a conversation into having a conversation in the most empathic, compassionate manner. So you need some mindset tips to help you step into the arena, right? It can be scary. It can be extremely intimidating to have a conversation, especially if you are an introvert and let's say your sibling or your partner is the extrovert, is very good with words and arguments, and you feel like, oh my gosh, before I even begin to say anything, they'll have me backed up in a corner and I won't know how to get out and this conversation will go nowhere. So you need to have certain mindset tips. So here are 5 mindset tips you will need before having a hard conversation. Number 1, very important, get clear about your intention. It's really important to get clear about your intention. Intention is a big word in all my teaching. I set my intention before I teach a class, before I have a client session, before I create a program, before I get on the phone for a difficult conversation, a truth-telling conversation. When my husband and I need to talk about something important, in my mind, I take 5 minutes and say, what is my intention here? And your intention, if you don't know what an intention is focusing on your why, W-H-Y. Focus on your why. So your intention could be, I wish to make peace. I wish to be open and listen well to the other person's point of view. I wish to show empathy. I wish to be authentic. Any of these could be a great intention. I wish to enrich our communication. Or I wish to be open to the future of this relationship. In some cases, that could be an intention. But always, always think about your intention. Number two, ground yourself. So important to consciously ground yourself. And what this looks like is just stand still for 2-3 minutes and imagine there are roots growing out of the soles of your feet, deep into the core of Mother Earth. And now watch bright white light traveling up deep from the earth's core through those roots, traveling up your feet, into your legs, your hips and thighs, your body, and all the way up to your crown chakra, which is at the top of your head, and moving up towards the sky. And then watch this light shower down on you, almost like you're standing under a waterfall of light. This is how you ground yourself as a way of feeling supported by heaven and earth. And when you ground yourself, you are actually saying energetically that you don't have to do this alone. You have support from divine unseen realms. And you ground yourself as a way to say, I'm going to stand strong in my power, in my truth, in my authentic being. So that's step number two. The third thing is prepare. Prepare ahead of time. Don't walk into a hard conversation like walking into the lion's den without any preparation. So you could use the template I just discussed to speak what you need to say. You could talk about, you know, what are my needs? What's my observation? What feelings do I have here? What needs are being unmet? And what is the specific request that I can make? So use this template to say what you need to say. And don't expect to get it perfect the first time. It's like working a muscle. The more you practice, the better you become at it. And the number four, detach from the outcome. We are so attached to how a conversation should go and who should say what and what you want to hear. But understand that the outcome you control is only what you deliver in that conversation. You can go into the conversation with a sacred intention to cooperate and connect, but you have no way of predicting or controlling how the other person will react. And you might say, Uma, I used the nonviolent communication method you taught us in class. I think I aced it, but I didn't get the outcome I wanted. And that's entirely possible. Which brings us to step number five, which is surrender. Here's the most important thing I want you to understand. We all grow through relationships. Imagine if the universe was full of people just like you. Well, then nobody would push your buttons and you would not grow, right? You would be a happy camper, but there would be absolutely no soul growth or evolution. Relationships are the most brutal classroom. This is how we grow. And one of the most important reasons why we need to speak our truth and allow the universe to sift and sort is because life is constantly shaking up the people who are in our lives and who need to leave our lives. So the universe is constantly sifting and sorting and sifting and sorting. Because who you were 2 years ago is not who you are today. And if you want to grow into a better version of yourself, you have to be willing to step into some discomfort. We must accept that we live in an intelligent universe that always serves our highest good. The universe is always recalibrating to serve your highest good. So if you have a hard conversation with someone and they decide to end the relationship because of what you said, and if it is time for that relationship to go, it will. Hard conversations are not about safety and security. Hard conversations are about soul growth. So if a relationship needs to go and the time is perfect for that to happen in your life, it will. But it simply creates more room for better relationships to come into your life. And that's the sifting and sorting process that I talked about. So let's quickly go over the five mindset tips. Number one, get clear about your intention. Number two, ground yourself. Number three, prepare ahead of time. Number four, detach from the outcome. And number five, surrender. So these are the five mindset tips that will really serve you as you prepare to have a hard conversation with someone. Now, I didn't want to leave you high and dry having taught you all these things. So here's how we can do this better and deeper. What I'm offering you is a two-hour coaching session. That's it, just 2 hours. A 75-minute first session and a 45-minute second session called Living Your Authentic Life. So if you work with me on this one-on-one, this is a one-on-one coaching program, here's what we will do. We will identify a relationship struggle you're currently dealing with and get to the root of your unmet needs. What need is going unmet, which creates that hot button issue inside of you? The next thing we'll do is explore the beliefs, doubts, and fears that keep you from speaking your truth. Once we've done that, together we'll work on a script to help you have the conversation with confidence, courage, and clarity. And by helping you do that, you will feel a sense of ease and peace that you completed your end of the bargain, no matter what the outcome. So we'll identify the relationship struggle, get to the bottom of your unmet needs, explore the doubts and fears and the beliefs that are keeping you from speaking your truth. We'll work on a word-by-word script. Together, we'll write the script to help you have the conversation so you can say what you need to say with confidence, courage, and clarity. And you will have completed what remains unfinished from your side so that you can let that relationship go to its eventual outcome. If it is meant to deepen, it will deepen. If it is meant to create room for something else, that's what will happen. And this is a two-hour session. Like I said, the first is a 75-minute session. The second is a 45-minute session. And for both these sessions, the two-hour session, I'm charging $129. I'm only offering 10 spots. So if you're really interested in doing this with me, book now if you're on the call. All you have to do is email me, uma@umagirish.com. Let me know you're interested, and I'll send you a link to book your session. Because you're on the call live, you may want to take advantage of it right now. There are only 10 spots. I'm not doing this for everybody. I'm traveling in December and January, and so I want to make sure that I keep my coaching time, you know, manageable. So I'm only booking 10 spots. And so if you're keen on doing this with me, just send me an email to uma@umagirish.com. Let me know you're interested. I will send you the scheduling link and you can book your session. So at this time, if you have a question, press *6 on your phone and I will unmute you from my end. If any of you have a comment or a question. You can press *6 on your phone and that will unmute you. Okay. Hi, Judy. Can you hear me?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute.
Okay.
I had a question regarding, like, I know you talk about how to have a nonviolent conversation, and you gave us the four steps, you know, to follow. But, you know, what if the person that you're trying to have this conversation with is violent, you know, speaking naturally? And you know, it's hard to be nonviolent when the other person is violent in their conversation. So how do you handle a situation like that?
Right. So this is why the mindset tips come in handy. You know, when you ground yourself, when you pray ahead of time, when you get clear about your intention, when you go in and believe that you are just going to do your best, that you're supported by a divine team, you don't have to do this alone. Sometimes just that will soften the energy around the energetic issue. And sometimes it could be, well, that they get a little violent and argumentative, and you can simply state your intention, which is, you know, my intention is to have a peaceful conversation. And if it simply doesn't go that way, they continue to be argumentative and aggressive, you just have to let it go. Then you know what to do next. You have to make the decision about, you know, if I can't have this conversation, what is my next step? That's something you need to think about.
Okay, thank you.
Does that help?
Yeah.
Because there really isn't anything you can do to influence what the other person will say or how they will react, right? You only control
right.
your side of the bargain, which is what I said. So you can go in with your best preparation, surround yourself with, you know, your angels and guides, your, you know, whoever you choose to call your divine support, and give it your best shot. But that's all you are expected to do. You don't have to do any more than that.
Okay. And I had
another
question.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Okay. So I know another step that you mentioned, you know, here regarding, you know, you said, we get clear about your intention, ground yourself, prepare yourself ahead of time. And then you say detach from the outcome, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one is very hard because, you know, like in my case, you know, there is a conversation that I feel I have pending for someone, with someone, but I know this person, you know, is known for gossiping, you know, and just saying things that they shouldn't say, you know, to certain people, you know, eventually it gets known, you know, and it's like, I know what the outcome would be if I have this conversation with this person, that most likely, you know, rumors will get started, eventually will get around, you know, it might get to people that I don't want to know about this. So how do you handle something like that? Do you just like accept the fact that, you know, like a rumor could get started and your name's going to be involved, you know, in that, or, you know, and just surrender to that? Or like, how do you handle it when it's a tough situation like that to detach?
Right. So I would think about how important is it for me to have this hard, honest conversation, because if it's something I really need to say to that person, I have to take the emotional risk of the person starting a rumor. And even if they did start a rumor, I have to then think about, you know, if people choose to believe her side of the story or believe in the gossip, then those are people I really don't want in my life. People who know who I am, who know my integrity, will be aware of the fact that I couldn't have said that or done that. So that's also a process of sifting and sorting through. People who really value you, who know you, or who have the courage to walk up to you and say, hey, I heard this. Is this true? I just wanted your side of the story as well. They are your friends. You get to know who your friends are through something like this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Okay, great questions, Judy. Thank you. Okay, I will unmute you, and I'm going to Bonnie. Hi, Bonnie. What's your question for me?
Hi. Thank you so much. First of all, it's been very, very informative. My question is, with people who just will not communicate honestly face-to-face about a situation, or they won't, you know, I'm speaking specifically about something that's going on between my mother and sister. So my mother, her default setting is she will not communicate honestly face-to-face. So with someone like that, do you continue, is it best to continue to encourage them to do it? I mean, while you're accepting them, I mean, my goal is to accept her where she's at, but do I continue to encourage her to, you know, communicate honestly with my sister, or do I just, is it wasted energy and it's better for me to just accept them, accept her where she is, seek to love her where she's at, and just let what happens lie?
First of all, let me ask you, how does your sister feel about this?
She's kind of a lot like my mom in that she won't speak as honestly, but she does a little more than my mom will. It's the situation is based on something she did, you know, just really quick. She stole my mother's identity and, you know, got, my mother's now in debt like $10,000. And my mother goes back and forth. Sometimes she wants to confront my sister about it. And other time, sometimes she wants me to do it. But she's wishy-washy about it. And I don't expect she ever will really confront the issue. She's just letting her credit be ruined and all this stuff, and her credit cards be closed, and it's just brutal to watch. So my sister will say, you know, she's sorry and feels bad, but, you know, I'm sure on some level she does, but she doesn't, her actions show much different. She's very much known for lying even when it's just as easy to tell the truth. So you can't, and even in trying to communicate with her myself about it, you know, I'd catch her in lies, and I wasn't confrontational or violent, you know, using violent conversation or anything, but, you know, it's like I know it's technically between them, but it's my mother too, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. The issue is actually between the two of them, and I know you want the best for your mother and you're feeling sorry that your mother has been put in this difficult situation, but aside from telling them to be honest with each other, there's very little you can do to force this conversation if neither one of them wants to be with the other face-to-face and ask certain tough questions and, you know, admit to certain things that they did. That's entirely up to them. So if your mother is not willing to talk to your sister and your sister is not willing to apologize and ask for forgiveness and change her behavior, and your it's really between the two of them. What are you going to do to force an outcome in this situation? It's really hard for you. And I'm not saying it's easy for you to watch what's going on, but aside from telling these two people what they need to do, if you invest too much of your energy on the outcome that you want, which is for both of them to sit across from each other and talk about it, which may not happen, you are just creating stress for yourself.
Right. I mean, my sister will, she'll apologize, say she's sorry, she feels horrible, all that, but she continues to lie, and we continue to find more that she's done, that she swore she didn't do, you know, and So my mother will call me and be like, you know, this has happened. I don't know what to do. It's so frustrating. And I just keep giving her truth and say, Mama, you really only have these options. And I know neither one of those is what you want. But by not doing anything, you are making a choice, in fact.
Right. That's the next piece I was going to say. You know, it seems to me like there can be something that your mother can do to reverse the situation, to protect herself in some way. If she is just sitting back and saying that this has happened again and, oh, my gosh, and she did it again and she's been lying, there is an element of the victim consciousness there. So she needs to take responsibility to stop this behavior from your sister. And if she's not willing to do that, then there's not very much you can do. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like kind of what I've been doing is really about all I'm doing is, do you think it would be, I don't know if she would do it. My guess would be she'd try. I don't know how much she'd be able to comprehend it, you know, as far as she's not used to this kind of talk. But do you think it would be a good recommendation? I should go as far as asking her to listen to this, you know?
You can definitely ask her to listen to this conversation. No harm in asking her to listen to this conversation. If it helps her, it will. At least it will land in some corner of her heart. And when it's ready, it'll start to seep in. I think it's a really good idea for you to do that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, honey. I really
thank you, Bonnie. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm muting Bonnie and going to wireless caller. Okay, you are unmuted.
Hi, Uma. It's Gina.
Hi, Gina.
Hi. I have a question regarding kind of difficult conversations with clients. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit hard for me because I like to please my clients, but at the same time, I also have policies around working with my clients. And so sometimes, you know, when they violate one of the policies, you know, then it irritates me. So, I mean, I just had, you know, a client today, and he had tried to violate our contract, you know, early on in working with him. You know, he'd committed to 10 hours, and then he all of a sudden just wanted 2 hours and wanted to get, you know, his money back and whatever. And I felt like he was just shopping in my bank account. I felt like he was taking advantage of me. And so I told him, look, my policy is not that I allow that type of refund, you know, and so, you know, you can have, you know, I spelled out the policy, and he was very kind of combative, and so, like you said, you know, you can't really control how they react, but at the same time, I have a business, so I have to protect my reputation, you know, and I also kind of just notice every time, you know, just because I had this little loss of trust with him, you know, early on working with him, you know, every single interaction since then has been kind of tense where I don't quite trust him. Like he'll say stuff and even today he emailed me after many, many months of inactivity and said, you know, how come this wasn't done? And I assumed it was already done. And I said, well, you didn't ask for it. You were inactive since, you know, June, you know? So, I mean, that stuff kind of just irritates me to no end to have to communicate that, and I just don't know if there's a better way, you know, maybe if it's because it's email, you know, I don't know, but I just want to, you know, I want to stop resenting that I still chose to, you know, work with this person, you know, to the end, and he's got like 2 hours left, and I'm just like waiting for the 2 hours to be up, you know.
Right.
Feel like I have trouble telling him, look, I kind of think that you're being a jerk and, you know, I need you to be kind to me and clear. You know, if you're asking for something, I need you to say it clearly. And if there's, you know, a miscommunication with email, we need to have a phone call or something. You know, it's like I have trouble telling him that, you know, because historically he's been almost kind of a jerk and abusive over email. But if I get on the phone with him, he tends to be somewhat better. So, I mean, I don't know if I want to invest, you know, more time to say, look, you know, we need to have a conversation so you can clarify what you mean or what. But, I mean, part of it is that we're, you know, we've got this very short amount of time left, and I don't want to work an extra minute over time at all with him. I just can't stand him, actually. So,
I want to ask you a question. Yes. About the about him reneging on your contract, had you set the expectations up ahead in terms of a written policy that, you know, he was committing to X number of sessions and that he couldn't dilly-dally around the number unless there was some emergency or some special situation?
Yeah. And I had, you know, I've sent him my policy link and unfortunately, I didn't have him, like, sign a contract. You know, I used to have these long contracts, you know, and proposals that I'd send to people. But, you know, I've kind of, you know, now I have a terms and conditions, you know. And so, but he had notification of that, you know, well at the beginning of working with me. So it wasn't like he didn't know. He didn't comply.
Yeah, and maybe with a client like this, it's better to get a signature because you can't hold it against him if he hasn't signed on the dotted line. But that being said, someone like him, even if he had signed on the contract, is quite capable of turning around and saying, but, you know, this is my situation today and getting belligerent. The second thing I want to say to you is, yes, email, people can be really combative and say all kinds of things on email and Facebook, social media, oh my gosh. Sometimes I dislike social media for that reason because people hide behind a screen and say anything they want to. Same with email.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were you, I'd say, let's get on Zoom. Let's get on a video conference call and talk about this face-to-face. And if he was getting belligerent and combative and trying to out-argue you and really not respect the terms of your contract, I would have actually stopped working with the person because there's nothing more I want. There's hardly anything I want more than peace in a relationship with my client. And if there is a client who is being belligerent, fortunately, I've been blessed not to have any like that till today and may it stay that way. But usually if you find yourself in a combative situation, then you have to ask yourself, what's the story I'm telling myself about continuing to work with the client? Because there is a story there about why you're letting him treat you the way he's treating you and what you're saying about how much he's paying you. Maybe it's a financial obligation. But you are allowing him to treat you in a certain way. You're giving him permission to treat you in a certain way. So you have to go inward and say, what's the story I'm telling myself about this situation? Why am I tolerating this?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter whether it's 2 hours or 20 hours. Nobody deserves to be treated the way this particular client is treating you from what I hear. And so you really need to go and ask, why am I tolerating this? Why is it okay for me to keep working with this person I utterly dislike? What is going on here? So it's really your internal issue more than his, because we teach people how to treat us.
Mm-hmm.
If you respect yourself, there's no way you will tolerate someone who disrespects you.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. So that's the question to ask. So I would really ask you to reflect on, you know, why you're tolerating this, why you're putting up with this, and what's the story around that.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it really just kind of goes back to my grief, because this client in particular, I took him on because he studies Alzheimer's research, and my dad had died of Alzheimer's. We talked about that at our initial, you know, phone call, and, you know, but he's been such a jerk to work with that I feel like it cringes, like I cringe every time I get an email from him, like what he's going to do now, what is he going to say now. Sometimes it's fine, sometimes it's really rude, and so I don't know, but, you know, I find his behavior unacceptable. I actually find his behavior unacceptable. So,
and your cringing is your body telling you what you shouldn't be putting up with. Our body never lies. You remember what I said about in the feelings step of the nonviolent communication process about emotions and body sensations. When you have a body sensation, your body is sending you a message. So every time you get an email from him, if you're feeling yourself contracting, your soul and spirit are shrinking, your soul is screaming at you to say, stop working with this guy. He's not right for you. He's not good for you.
Mm-hmm.
He's messing with your vibration. You shouldn't be tolerating this from him. But mm-hmm. you've been, you know, you haven't been listening to that voice. You've been going ahead, and that's why I'm asking you, what's the story you're telling about this whole situation through which you're letting him treat you the way he's treating you? So that's mm-hmm. something you need to get clear about. Because he's showing you who he is, and you are letting him do what he's doing to you despite him showing you that he is who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, this is about each one of us taking responsibility for what we allow into our life.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think part of it is I just kind of know that if I'm able to stick out the 2 hours, it could be finished in a day. Like, I don't have to deal with him ever again. And I've already actually referred him to another company, you know, so,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's just a little bit of stubbornness on my part that I don't want to refund, you know, 2 hours at the end of a contract.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't know if it's stubbornness on your part or a certain icky sensation about telling him, you know, I don't want to work with you even though it's 2 hours. But use this experience as a life lesson. Ask yourself, what did I learn through this relationship? What is this person showing me about myself? Because people show up in your life for a specific reason. Nobody is a random visitor into your life. This mm-hmm. person has come into your life and pushed certain buttons and treated you in a certain way for you to get a loud and clear message from this experience. So I would say use this as a life lesson, never to attract another person like this to work with.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Gina. Great question. Do you have anything else for me?
No, that's all.
Okay. Perfect. I will mute you now. And wait to see if anybody else has a question or a comment. I don't see any raised hands. So again, if you'd like to do the 2-hour session with me, the first hour is 75 minutes, the second hour 2 weeks later will be a 45-minute session, and your total investment is $129. Send me an email, uma@umagirish.com. I'll send you my scheduling link, and you can set up your appointment. So if nobody else has any other questions, I think we are good. I hope this information was useful to you. And whether you sign up for the session or not, I hope you use what you heard this evening to learn how to lean into some of these hard conversations. Because like I said, this is a skill that we must master. It will serve us in the long run, even if in the short term it feels uncomfortable, awkward, difficult. But that's true of anything, any life experience that doesn't come naturally to us. To learn anything, to better ourselves from who we are to where we want to be, we have to experience and welcome some amount of discomfort into our lives. So I hope all of you will take away some insights and put them into practice, because knowledge is one thing, but taking action is huge. So take action on what you heard this evening in whatever way possible, and you will start seeing things shifting in your life. So thank you very much again for being with me today. I send you all love and blessings. Take care. Good night.